We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Chris Liss. It is Monday, January 10th. It is the playoffs are finally upon us. We are wrapping up Week 18. We don't even have a Monday night game. We are truly wrapping up Week 18 after a pretty wild weekend. Started off really lame, I thought, and then it had this crescendo to actually interesting stuff that happened, Chris.
Yeah, I thought it was a really enjoyable weekend. I didn't, you know, so a couple of good things happened for me this weekend. I didn't have much on the line, so I just watched the game with pretty much, let's see what happens, you know. And then I did have the force the bet Jaguars long shot against you, which was fun. And then, you know, I was rooting for chaos for that, you know, Sunday night kneel down fest that I was hoping to see, which something even weirder happened, which is the whole, we'll get into that, obviously. And then, you know, I went 12-4 against the spread. I always kill it in week 17, 18. This last week, I don't know why. I want to go back for like 5 years. It's like ridiculous. And I don't know why. I'm not having a great year against the spread. I take the Giants way too often. I've, you know, done some stupid things. But every last week, I always crush it. I won. Okay, so I've got a home pool, and it's not a lot of money. It's like 125 to get in. There's like 14 people in it. But every week, you know, the winner of the week gets paid. And I've only won 2 weeks. But if there's a tie, you know, that goes on to the next week. So I've only won 2 weeks, but both those weeks were triple weeks. So I won basically 6 weeks by winning 2 weeks. And I just won this last one at 12-4. Wow. So that was fun. And it was just, you know, it was just a cool weekend of football. Now, the Chiefs Broncos, I had the Broncos plus 10, and that was good. They barely held on because the Chiefs were on the 5-yard line when they knelt it out. But the Broncos were going to win. They had Melvin Gordon running the ball. They're up one with less than 8 minutes left. They're driving down the whole field. And Melvin Gordon just like costs it up. And the dude runs it back like 84 yards for a touchdown. And all of a sudden, the Chiefs are winning. That was like the worst giveaway of a game I've ever seen. It was like, oh, wait, we're in control of this game. We're going to knock the Chiefs down. The Bengals are going to have to play this weekend. It was going to be a whole different thing. And all of a sudden, they just were like, you know what? I'll just fumble and let you get a touchdown. And now it's over.
Well, and in fairness to Gordon, I mean, he barely had the ball in his hands when he got hit. I think that's part of it, is that he just got crushed. It was a bad block, but still, yeah. I think it was kind of ironic that Melvin Gordon, who had a big game prior to that, was the better of the two backs in that game, was the guy that coughed up. And then it was a fumble. Not only that it was a fumble six. I mean, the fact is that nobody else hustle back. The only guy hustling back to try to make the tackle was the quarterback, Drew Lock.
Half-assed, though. It was very half-assed.
Yeah, he got outrun by a linebacker, which is kind of funny, after running for two touchdowns earlier. But everything was half-assed in that game. Even after that, they get down to the Chiefs 14 on 4th-and-9, 13, and maybe the 13, and they kick the field goal down 7. So even if you stop the Chiefs, guess what? You still need a touchdown.
Kicking
the field goal was nutless. Especially when you're going against the Chiefs, who I know they're not the same Chiefs as previous years, but come on. Do you really want to count on, okay, we're going to stop Mahomes? We got this, no problem. No, the air went out of the balloon. They had that one big conversion, that one big play right away. And after that, you could see the Broncos were just totally deflated and it was all over. And the funny thing is, like, listening to the, I was in the car at the time for this, like, hearing them defend the field goal kick. Like, I was out to lunch with my daughter, and right after they went for the kick, we like, okay, let's go. This game's over. They screwed up. I get in the car, like, I all listen to it anyhow, and I hear I don't even know who the analyst guy is. It's a former player, and it's not the usual same good, like, radio crew. And he's like, the fans are asking him to make a crazy decision to go for it. He's like the one guy that's still out living outside the box there. You know, everybody else, I read your article this morning. Yeah. It's like, he's still in the outside. He's still in that. He's in his little cozy little kick is good box. Right. Every kick is good. And he's like, oh, it'd have been crazy if you're listening to the crowd. Oh, because you can just stop them and get it back. You mean stop them and then still try to score a touchdown? Okay, sure. Okay, sure, Jan. Okay, yeah. I mean, come on. Yeah. So that was, but I was on the Broncos, you know, so it was fine. I was like,
it was beautiful. I mean, the fact that they
preserved the cover,
they let them get each first down just to the 5 yard line, and then they could kneel it out. And it was close, like they only knelt it out by a couple of seconds. I was like, man, I really don't want them to start running the ball trying to score. Because you know that happens if there's like 10 seconds that are going to be left and they have to give it back. Instead of kneeling, they might just run it forward. And
Najee Harris all over again.
Yeah,
he just
exactly.
decides he's going to score. Yeah.
You want to know something funny? The guy I do the Iowa radio show, Scott Unash, he told me he lost by half a point in his championship on the Najee Harris play on the Monday night. Like half a point after he got loose, including all the yardage and the touchdown. He lost by half a point on that play. So I thought that was I told them we get all these terrible calls on our XM show where people are purporting to have bad beats and they're just like garden variety losses. And I was like, that would have qualified as a good one, losing on like the very last significant play in the Monday night game. But that was stupid. And the Dallas game was annoying because I was like, oh, you know, I got seven on the Eagles and it went down to 3.5. Oh, I got closing line value, Jeff. I got closing line value. I must be a genius. So you know, the game starts, the Eagles score a touchdown. I'm like, yeah, Minshew can handle this. It's no big deal. He's a good backup quarterback. But they didn't bring the defense. And then Dak, and I felt this was a bit gauche. Dak throws 5 touchdowns on this.
They kept
like,
their starters in for 3 quarters of the game there.
Well, that against the Eagles backup defense. And I'm like, I don't respect, like, look, you're padding your stat. Everyone pads the stats. Some Brady padded his stats, you know, whatever. But This was extreme padding of the stats. His season long numbers are going to look a lot better because of a meaningless game against a preseason defense. So that was disappointing. So I was 1-1. The dream. I always, whenever I win the first game, the Thursday night game or the first Saturday, I'm like, I'm going 16-0. You know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get the Holy Grail. And I hate when the dream is destroyed that quickly. You know, I realize that. So
I took Dallas. But as soon as I knew Hurts was going to be scratched, I thought the Cowboys were going to bench their starters too. I mean, because and I'm like, oh, why would they even bother? Well, now they're the 3 seed instead of the 4. Now, if you're Dallas and Dallas fans, if you're listening, you know, chime in on this. Would you rather face San Francisco, which you're doing, or be the 4 seed and face Arizona again? Arizona to me doesn't look the part. I don't know, but I mean, I don't trust either Arizona or San Francisco, to be honest with you, but
You don't trust them, but they're both dangerous. I mean, both of them, Arizona just beat Dallas in Dallas.
Right. Of course.
And then San Francisco is dangerous. I mean, so, I don't think it really mattered at all, whether they won or lost. I guess it could conceivably matter. Maybe if there were like an upset later on, like who could host like the title game. I'd have to like game it out more, but it was really a game where neither team cared and Dallas decided to try. I mean, they sat, you know, no Tyron Smith, no Michael Parsons. I mean, there were a couple key guys that were sitting, but, you know, Dak, I don't know. That was some serious stat padding and I was just pissed because I had the Eagles +7 and I thought that was a good pick, you know, going into the game. But let's not bury the lead, man. Let's just talk about this insane Sunday night game because, It wasn't as good of a game as people are saying. It was the most bizarre, one of the most bizarre games.
It was entertaining though. It wasn't, you don't have to be good to be entertaining.
Yes, it was entertaining. There's no doubt. Well, I was watching on the rewind, so I was just seeing play after play after play. So I can't even imagine dragging this thing out in real time.
You didn't know the result, did you?
No, I didn't know who's going to win. And I had the Raiders +3 and I needed it. And, you know, there were some times, I mean, the Raiders had it. They were up 15. It was like game over. And the Chargers were, you know, you know, basically on match point, like 10 different points. They had 10 match points against them. They had the touchdown at 4th and 23. They had the 2-point conversion. It was a must have. It was over. They had at least 3 or 4 fourth and tens. One of them they didn't get, and there was like holding call, 5 yards.
You know, it was
It was legit. Okay.
It was legit.
I didn't see it. Yeah, okay.
Because I'm sure they fast forwarded through that on the it was a total hold right at, you know, right as he's making his break, he totally got held. It was completely a good call.
Okay.
And by the way, that was the one call the Chargers got all night.
The Raiders got some.
The calls.
This is why this game was so just bananas, because the first Chargers drive, I mean, second Chargers drive where they scored a touchdown, it was 3rd and long. They get a pass. It's tipped up in the air with 2 people. Receiver catches. They convert. New set of downs. Then it's 3rd and 17 and holding call. First down. They get another first down on a hold when it's 3rd and 17. It was like, dude, what are you doing? You're holding like off the ball. Like you just gave him a first down on 3rd and 17. Then they score a touchdown. Then the Raiders get the ball. The Raiders get the ball. Before that, they miss – Derek Carr misses Zay Jones wide open, just overthrows him. Like, just easy touchdown. No, that was early. And then they punt because of that. But then what's his name? Andre Roberts muffs the punt, and the Raiders score a touchdown anyway.
Yeah,
and then on the next drive after the Chargers get all these cheap, like, ways to get down the field, the Raiders – get like some cheap pass interference in the end zone, and they're like just gifted a touchdown. So this game was so ridiculous from the outset. It was like all this crazy stuff was going on. But then the Raiders basically salted it away. That crazy 4th and 1 at their own 20, they got stuffed. The Chargers need it to be 4th and 10 or more. They can't deal with 4th and 1.
Yeah.
And so they get the field goal. They're up. Eventually they're up, 15, and it's over. But of course, these 4th and 10s, it was just unbelievable. I mean, they were dead to rights. They couldn't, 1st through 3rd down were just nothing. And on 4th and 10, it's like, Herbert's under pressure. He moves around. He's like sliding. He sidearms it. Just incredible that they survived so many match points.
He had so many great throws in this game. And there were a lot of drops too.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, I kept on thinking, okay, we're going to blame the 4th and 1. We're going to blame this. The fact is, there were times he was hitting people in the hands. He hit a guy in the chest one time. And they dropped it. I mean, it was wild how bad the hands were. Then Mike Williams balled out later on, made some great plays, but still, it was wild how bad some of this was. We haven't even gotten to the craziness of overtime, but that was so crazy. You're right about the Zay Jones things. There was another overthrow in overtime that if he connects and he was open, it's a game over. On the first drive of overtime for the Raiders, there was a deep play where Zay Jones had a step, and Carr just missed him because that's what he does. It was crazy. There's so many different ways it could have ended. On Twitter for this game was amazing, by the way. Just amazing. So many jokes to be made. So many wild observations just going back and forth. There was a point where Goodell's like, hey, guys, just make it look good, but still you can do your tie thing, but just make it look good. And it was all setting up to that. It was wild.
Well, they delivered. I mean, they delivered and then some. But I will say a couple of things. One is, the more I thought about it, like during the day after Jacksonville is winning, and you also start to realize, like for Pittsburgh and Baltimore, that game was supposedly kind of meaningless. But it's like Jacksonville didn't have to win. Jacksonville just had to keep it close for those two teams to want to kill each other to win that game. Because if Jacksonville had a chance to win, of course those teams had to try to win. Jacksonville wins easily. And then it wasn't even in doubt. And then I was thinking, this is malpractice not to kneel down. Or I think it was Draft Cheat had the idea of, you don't even need to kneel down. You just like mingle about for the whole quarter. The refs would call forward progress, but you could kind of dance around for a bit.
You could even do it on the kickoff. You could do it on the kickoff.
Run around, hand it off, just kind of have some fun. There's a lot of trust involved by the other team. But the thing is, there's no benefit of burning the other team by winning the game, because it's the same thing. Why create bad blood when, it doesn't do you any good better than the tie? There's no added incentive except to like kiss up to the NFL. Oh, respect the shield. Oh, we got to respect the shield. Like, this is bullshit. Respect the shield. Dude, who cares? Do you understand that a team like the Packers, they, for God knows what reason, they left Aaron Rodgers in with his bad toe all game. I'm starting to think it's like the Curt Schilling sock. I mean, how bad could the toe possibly be? And I love Aaron Rodgers, but come on, dude. If your toe's that bad, you shouldn't be playing. But if Packers had put in, a third string QB, if they had called up practice squad players or whatever, nobody would have batted an eye, and they lost 37-0, and it was a total joke. No problem. So, but a tie is beyond the pale. Come on, that's just absurd. You've right. earned the right to have a bye. Now, both these teams get all, you know, someone else brought it up. The extra paychecks for the coaches, the share, the playoff shares for all this is money for everybody. Your fans get a playoff game. You get a bye week in week 18, so you're totally fresh for the wild card game. I mean, they went to overtime. This is like a war they went through to overtime. And it's malpractice they didn't just kind of shake hands and kneel down and say, you know what, I don't owe anything to the NFL. If the Steelers, you know, have a problem with it, maybe they shouldn't have tied the Lions at home that time. And then, exactly. and they would have made us play.
We or lost had to play. The Chargers or lost to the Raiders. You know, all of these things right. apply. And meanwhile, right. by the way, the Steelers and Ravens almost tied in their own right. That would have been amazing. That would have been the best part of it all. I mean, if they don't convert that fourth down pass to Ray McCloud, they might, you know, Ravens could have either driven or they could have easily ended in a tie. But because, you know, the thing is, the Ravens are going to have Justin Tucker kicking, the best field goal kicker of all time. I mean, it's just amazing. It could have been, both games could have ended in ties. I mean, talk about head exploding stuff. It would have been awesome.
Well, it was so funny too, because as the Raiders were driving in overtime, you know, nobody was in any hurry, because it's like for both teams, it's like, take your time. Let's not rush this, right? Like if the Raiders don't get close enough, you know, and the clock runs out. I mean, they wouldn't have tried, I don't think, a 60-yard field goal, because you get blocked. You start to like get into a point where, you know, a 60-yard field goal, well, they have a really good kicker actually, but you know, whatever, 60-plus yard field goal. Normally it's like, I don't want to settle for a tie. Let's get the win. Right. But like, if you start getting in the high 50s, you start the risk reward starts going the other way on you. And, you know, as far as the Chargers are concerned, they're like, dude, take your time. I saw that clock running down. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, what's actually going to happen here?
And well, you didn't watch it live. So did you get into the debate about why the Chargers called that timeout? Did you notice that?
No, I didn't even notice that. What
okay,
happened?
So yeah, I didn't think so, because you watch it on Game Pass. So it's third and six or third and four, for the Raiders. And if they don't gain any more yards, it's a 55-yard field goal.
Right.
With 5 seconds left on the play clock, the Chargers on defense called a timeout. And you're like, what? Why are they doing that? And the explanation after the fact was, okay, you know, we were in the wrong defense. The Raiders are going to run a play here. They're going to have a run play, and we don't have our run package in there. But what that did is it almost kind of like the Raiders like, okay, we can get closer and win this game, because there's actually a benefit to the Raiders winning this game. They want to avoid the Chiefs, right? If they just tie, they're the 7 seed. They go to Kansas City. Instead, they go face an arguably an easier opponent in Cincinnati. They're going on the road either way. But whereas with the Chargers, I think it was, you know, it's either a win or a tie, and they're in the same position, I think, seed wise and all that. But there was an actual tangible benefit for the Raiders to win the game versus tie it. But, you know, in the heat of the moment, they may not have thought about it as much. And Jacobs rips off a 10-yard run after that play. It was going to be like a 55, 57 yarder, which you don't know if you're going to try that. 47, sure, no problem. We're going to do that. The fact is that, and the Chargers said that they were in the wrong defense, but it was kind of like this whole like prisoner's dilemma thing. Are you cheating? Okay, I'm going to cheat because I think you might be cheating and all that. They kind of went into that. But once they got the first down, they got into like,
what do you mean? They called the timeout to let them like,
well, why did the defense call the timeout? Like, because they're just the Raiders were taking their time on these running plays.
Right. Yeah.
They weren't they weren't showing any sort of urgency. And even after, like, there's an interview, like, you know, they asked Carr, did it change your mindset? Yeah, it did a little bit, he goes. And then, like, there's a screen cap of, like, a Raider player talking to Eckler saying, we thought you guys were just going to kneel it. And he goes, and he said the timeout changed things a little bit. So I don't know. You know, I've seen some other people make some good arguments that, no, they were going to try to kick anyhow all along.
Right.
If they weren't, why would the
timeout
play?
Why would the timeout make them think about, hey, you know, we actually, if we gain enough yards and make it an easier field goal, we can go to the 5 seed and this is good for us? Is that was the thing?
Well, or it's just like, oh, why are you calling timeout? We're happy to content to let this game end, and now you're trying to stop the clock. What are you trying to get us?
How many seconds were left? How many seconds were left on the clock on the play clock?
38 or so. There were like 4 seconds left on the play clock, 38 seconds left. So, say, for instance, you get a stop. are you trying to get the ball back now all of a sudden? Why are you calling timeouts on defense?
Right. Oh, they thought it was sort of like, it was like a paranoia, like in Dr. Strangelove, when like, you know, when you accidentally launch the nukes, then you're like, but they're going to think you did that on purpose. So now we got to launch all the nukes. It's like, you're trying to beat us. Oh, well now we're going to beat you. It's like, we had this thing. It's a very fragile, a fragile truce that you have between you and the other team. It's like, if you even suspect that they're trying to win, you got to beat them. But, you know, as long as you trust each other, I think they were going to do the, it seemed to me like they were going to do the field goal all along.
I think that's probably the right inference, but we don't know for sure.
But they weren't overly concerned about it the way they would be in a game where a win is better than substantially better than tie, like a regular season game. They were like, yeah, we're going to try to get into field goal range, but there was no hurry. There was no urgency to it. And you're right. Maybe the timeout like made them run a really good play or, you know, figure out exactly what they're going to do. But what a just bananas. I mean, even the Steelers, you know, who were in, like, they had to wait to see if that field goal cleared. I mean, they didn't know.
Yeah.
And it was almost a tie also. Yeah, it was just bananas. I couldn't believe what I was watching. The fourth and tens, I'm like, first of all, I would have been pissed if the Chargers covered. Like, that's what I was worried about because they could have covered in overtime. And they settled. You know, the worst thing that happened was that the Raiders scored a field goal in overtime to go up. And the Chargers drove down. And it was third and six, you know, deep in Raider territory, and they failed. And it was fourth and six. And because it was overtime and they were down three, they settled for the field goal. But I'm like, dude, they would have scored a touchdown if they just kept going on fourth down. Like, they couldn't be stopped on fourth down. I'm like, I was relieved. I was like, okay, now I got the cover pretty much because, you know, next score wins. But at first I was like, I guess they're going to kick the field goal to tie it. I guess. You just converted like 8 fourth and 10s in a row. You have fourth and six. You can win the game. But you're like, let's just tie it. I understand why they tied it, but like, think about it, what just happened. And all of a sudden, fourth and six was a bridge too far. It was, it was interesting, you know?
I think they kind of screwed up by, after they got to the like second and six, they threw it twice, stopped the clock, two incompletions too. I mean, they run the ball twice. There's less time on the clock. Maybe the Raiders aren't, you know, don't have enough time to get into field goal position too. So, you know, that there's all sorts of little permutations there that are just wild about this game. We could talk about it forever, but we got all other stuff to cover. Quickly, a note from our friends at WinBet. If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WinBet brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more are at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WinBet's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WinBet is currently available in 7 states, Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet now. That's WYNNBET. WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. Chris, you talk about want to talk about burying the lead. You didn't know. I don't think you've noticed this. I hate to advertise it, but you know, In some ways, I had a really good week. You know, I won in DFS, won Tout Wars DFS contest, whatever, but it's nice. Cool. The Bengals got to rest their starters. I was wildly entertained. But I had the all-time biggest choke in Stake League. I lost to Len by 90 points, and he passed me in the stake bet.
Oh, my God.
I am the self-buyer.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. Sorry, dude. That is horrible. I did not even notice.
It was the chokiest choke that ever choked. Deontay Johnson dropped passes like it was last year. Kyle Pitts, you know, I screwed up too. I could have benched Kyle Pitts for Hunter Henry, which was a 10-point, it was like 11-point difference. But I thought when they announced that Pitts was active and playing in this game, I swapped Pitts back in. Because I'm like, Henry, he's touchdown only. He won't do anything. So, of course, this week he goes for like 100 yards, and Pitts goes for like 2 for 15. It was crazy. And everything you know, Nick Chubb gets screwed again all the time. Dearness Johnson's getting goal line carries. You know, Chubb got like 10 carries. I would have been better off like finding somebody, some schlub off the waiver wire, but I scored like 77 points this week. It was horrible.
Oh man, my condolences. And we were mocking Len the whole year about being a buyer. Len must be over the moon. what a triumphant week 18 for him to come back from that kind of deficit. He was worried about being the double buyer 8 weeks ago, and now he's not even buying at all. I mean,
I was in the championship game last week in this stupid league.
And now you're a self-buyer. I mean, you're only going to buy your own. But you still have to deal with people like me ordering 8 steaks, and you still got to pay for, a sixth of that, whatever I did.
I'm just going to enjoy the meal. I'm going to enjoy a good meal with my friends. I had Daniel Carlson going, by the way, too. That was the crazy thing. I actually, he got me 17 points. I'm like, okay. And that's the only, but if I did.
How much did you win for Tot DFS this week?
I don't know how much money I won, but basically it's probably going to be a net even. Cause I'll probably pay $150 is my share or something like that.
About that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be fine, but I'm going to enjoy a good dinner with friends, but it's
just to get rug pulled like that. And on week 18 is rough. That's so crazy, man. That is so crazy. People don't know how important the stake league is. Like, it's not, I mean, obviously it was more money to us 20 years ago than it is now, but it's the status. You know, when you go to the dinner, you're either a buyer or you're an eater. And being a buyer, even a self-buyer, it's a little diminishing for one's soul to have to sit there and watch people stuff their faces on your dime. Yeah. And being an eater, it's sort of a fraternity of evil. You can be part of the fraternity of evil. You and the other eaters are evil, and you're going to extract from people beyond what you need for your basic nutrition. And, you thought you were part of Team Evil, laughing at the buyers, and now
I lost by 5 points. Five points there.
Yeah, that's tough. And it was just... And you probably just didn't take it very seriously, right? Because you had nothing to gain by setting your lineup that game. I guess you did pay attention to the tight end, but that was it.
I mean, I set my lineup. Everybody came up short. It was great. My defensive lineman didn't get any points. He was a Bengal, so that's kind of on me. I could have picked up anybody. Maybe he would have gotten a stack. But Nick Chubb got 6.5 points. Javonte Williams got 7.4. Just think if it's, if it's he getting the goal line carry instead of Melvin Gordon, he holds on to the ball. He scores a touchdown later. The Broncos win. Lots of alternate universes out there.
Yeah.
Devontae Freeman had 3.7 yards. They decided this was the Latavius Murray week. Keenan Allen gets 8 points. Just everything went wrong. It was crazy.
Just think of the alternate universe, though, where you got 0 points this week, or that you were the stake league double buyer with 0 points on the season. And there is one of the many multiverses that split every fraction of a second. So
MCU is doing all this multiverse stuff right now. So do you watch any of those? Did you see the new Spider-Man?
No, I haven't seen. I haven't seen any of that. They're doing it's like a quantum that they're doing that.
They're doing a lot of that. And so did Loki. I won't get into it too much just for the people who are still looking to see it, but it's pretty cool. Cause the comic books got into it too. So, they're being loyal to that, which is kind of cool too. So that was terrible. I mean, I did get to watch, the early slate, first of all, like watching the Colts just, oh my God, choke away so badly. Once they got down like 16-3, you knew it was over. Carson Wentz is not going to be able to rally. This is not a team that can win from behind. They're like the Pats, that they're great bullies, but they're not a great comeback team.
No, Wentz is bad. He's just not good. And Taylor's great, but Jacksonville stops the run, and they set out to stop the run. And Trevor Lawrence played capably, and Marvin Jones made some plays, and that was it. I mean, they just beat him. It wasn't close. I mean, the Colts actually scored in garbage time, but that was their only touchdown of the day. And, it's so weird because the Colts were 7-7, but they had beaten some good teams and they had looked really tough. And they go in and they beat Arizona on the road, and they go in and they crush New England also. So they beat Arizona on the road. They beat New England at home soundly. And you're like, okay,
they've got a home game against the Raiders, and then they get Jacksonville. They're in,
They were 6-6. I'm getting the actual. They weren't 7.
They're 9-6.
They were 9-6. So they were 9-6, and they were 7-6. Then they win these two huge games against tough teams, and those teams, Arizona and New England, were better at the time too. And then they got two easy games: a home game against the Raiders and at Jacksonville. Okay, they're gonna end up 11-6. They're gonna maybe push Tennessee for the division title. And no, they lose both of those games to the Raiders, who are actually a decent team. And then they get beat by Jacksonville badly. What a way to get knocked out of the playoffs. But, you know, this kind of like Phillip Rivers 1 year and Carson Wentz the next. That's below the threshold that you need. You know, you need to get somebody, even Jared Goff on the Lions is better than those guys, I think. And you just need like that baseline QB that isn't a net negative. And those guys
Davis
were.
Mills could have been better.
I mean, next year I would definitely take Mills over Wentz, but you know, they didn't know that they didn't know who he was at the time.
What's worse is they paid for the privilege, both in terms of the draft picks. They gave up 2 first rounders, right? And then they took on this massive cap hit. I mean, and he's under contract for next year. I mean, the Eagles, they make the playoffs and get good draft picks too. They get the Dolphins and they get
Colts. Got Minshew for a sixth, who's better than Wentz, who's cheap. Yeah. You know, it's a real indictment though of the Chargers is that they've got Justin Herbert on a rookie contract. Okay. So they've got this guy who is playing at a top 3 or 4 QB in the league level on a rookie deal. And they couldn't make a 7-team playoff in their conference.
Yeah. The Bengals,
is bad.
Burrow and Herbert are the two most valuable contracts in football.
Yeah. It's not even close.
Yeah. And yeah, it is kind of crazy. And the thing is, the Chargers, they had a couple things that, you know, and I know we spent a lot of time on, but they're interesting. But, you know, they couldn't stop the run all year, and they couldn't stop the run when it mattered most in overtime against Josh Jacobs. They got that 10-yard run, and that's what made it an easy field goal attempt for Carlson. It made it easy to them to decide to even kick it, for that matter. And in all the previous runs prior to that to get to that spot. And then the thing is, the right side of their offensive line got hurt early in the year, and they never recovered from that. Because that was the other thing in that consistent threat in that game is the Raiders' pass rush was making life miserable for Herbert.
Right, but he still got him back to a tie in overtime under pressure. I know,
despite all that, yeah.
And they knew he was throwing every single play. And so, I don't know. There's something off about that. I mean, maybe Staley will turn out to be a good coach. I wonder if he's just optimizing for one thing. The sort of like surface analytics. I don't want to say analytics. Analytics is deep. Analytics covers second order effects if you do it right, but sort of surface level optimization of, who cares about the run? You know, analytics has shown us the run doesn't matter. Things like that, and it's come back to bite him that he doesn't really he's missing some important second order effects of running the ball. Although he talked about it, he was the guy who said running the ball has second order effects. And so he's the guy who talked about it. So he's not unaware of it.
No.
But the way that the team was run, they somehow have one of the, as you said, I should have included Burrow in my column. I forgot about him because he'd been hurt last year and I'd kind of crossed him off. But based on the way he's played the last month, he and Herbert, they're the two commodities. I mean, Mahomes is great, but he's getting paid like it. And all the older quarterbacks are getting paid like crazy too. So those are the two most valuable contracts in sports. And you got to make the playoffs. Because the edge of having Herbert for that price in a salary cap league is just it's massive, and to not make the playoffs means you had to, it's bigger than Mike Trout, you know, before he got his big contract, and baseball doesn't have a salary cap, but it was Angels-esque failing to make the playoffs despite
having
Herbert.
That's a good comp. That's a very good comp. I like that comp.
Well, Trout got hurt, Trout and Ohtani. We don't make the playoffs with Trout and Ohtani.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's crazy. We'll talk coaches here in a second. But first, quick note from our friends at HOFR. This episode of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast is brought to you by HOFR, Daily Fantasy Sports Refined. No confusing salary caps, no annoying player drafts, just simple multiple choice questions on the stats you know and the players you love. That's right. The majority of HOFR contests are focused on single sporting events and only feature questions about popular players and recognizable stats, allowing users to make their picks confidently and quickly. Plus, you never play against the house or versus those fantasy sharks. The playing field is level for even the most amateur user to find him or herself landing in the money. Unlike other apps, where an incorrect answer can end your night, on HOFR, the incorrect answers never eliminate you from competition. The other night, the questions were as simple as, how many touchdowns will Tom Brady throw? And which player will have the most rushing yards? So make your NFL Sunday picks with confidence and ease on HOFR. So do not wait another second. Download HOFR, that's HOFR, from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store right now. HOFR, it's everything the fantasy sports world has been waiting for. All right, silly season, the coaching season has already started. Lots of guys have already started to lose their jobs, Chris. Fangio got fired on Sunday morning. They didn't wait very long at all to swing that axe. We already knew about Jacksonville being open. Now Matt Nagy has been fired. And the big shocker, Mike Zimmer has been fired along with his GM. But the big shocker is Brian Flores getting fired in Miami. They won like 8 out of 9 down the stretch. He's had like just a couple of years there. Stephen Ross, the owner, wants his guy, I guess.
I didn't even realize that Flores had been fired. I saw Nagy and I saw Zimmer, but those were kind of foregone conclusions. Brian Flores got fired on a winning season, sweeping the Patriots with that roster, with Tua coming back, you know, banged up for a few weeks with that, with all the injuries they had and having basically, you know, nobody of these young guys that he's developing. They fired Flores? Really? Dude, I would fire like 3/4 of the coaches of the league tomorrow to hire Flores.
Yeah. I think he's a good coach. Now, you could argue that maybe he ran a terrible offense, but you know, that he's not the one that drafted an offensive line that can't protect Tua. Now, maybe, you know, you spend a top 10 draft pick on Tua and the offense looks like a high school offense. Maybe that's it. I get it. Cause it is an ugly, it's not a aesthetically pleasing offense, to say the least. You see, like,
isn't he a defensive coach though, Flores?
I think so too. He is.
Well, I want to just hire a good offensive coordinator. I mean, that team was 1-7. They finished 9-8. That's bizarre. The other guy that I heard was on the chopping block was the Texans guy. What's his name?
Yeah, Culley, I heard, was on it beforehand. But like, so far, that axe hasn't swung, but still could. I mean, Joe Judge still is employed.
Giants, John Mara, I don't want to say this for sure, but, you know, my thesis about John Mara, some of the things he's done, he stood by his kicker. Who was accused of some pretty bad stuff. And then as soon as the tide turned, they dumped him. And it was kind of like one or the other, right? I'm not saying what was the right call initially. I'm just saying you don't do it because of – you either stand by the guy or you don't. But you don't, like, make a show of it and then cave right away. There was a bunch of things like that. I think with Beckham, he was kind of nutless. And, you know, my thesis is that a lot of these guys, it's like, you know, the show Succession, right? You get Logan Roy builds the company. And he's kind of a bastard, but he's really competent, really sharp. And then you have a bunch of kids that grow up rich and they just kind of play it being a business, running a business, but they don't really know because they've never really had to do anything. They've grown up in too much comfort. And I think some of these second generation owners are just kind of living off the family legacy. And the Giants, it seems that it's like they're a class organization, like the Rooneys, the Maras, that's like the old school.
Right.
And it's like they don't fire anybody. They stick with people way too long, typically. And, you know, I'm not like Judge has to go. He's the problem. I don't even think Gettleman's that bad and people hate Gettleman. They basically were the least, I think they were the worst team in the league by the end of the year because of their quarterback situation. But
they couldn't roster a full roster. They couldn't, because of the salary cap, for some reason, they could not top. They couldn't even have a full 53-man roster. Yeah.
Well, so here's the thing. So there were two things. One is the offensive line, which they invested in, was just terrible. And the other was, you know, so I actually liked when they signed Glennon, not because I like Glennon, but because it was a commitment to Daniel Jones to be the guy or not and not have some sort of controversy. And so I was like, all right, it's Daniel Jones's job to win or lose, and then they can move on. You don't want to have it so that, like, you know, you draft Trey Lance, but you've got Jimmy G there. And it's like, who's even the quarterback for next year? It'll be Trey Lance, but you end up just like stunting development. Okay. Give Daniel Jones the reins. There's nobody who's serious. Who's going to compete. But the cost of that was when Jones got hurt and Jones was not playing well. And the Giants offense was already bad. It was below a pro level. So he and Jake Fromm is just, you had a zero at quarterback and then you had a bad offensive line with it. And I didn't watch the Giants games the last 2 weeks. Yeah. I've watched every Giants game for like 20 years and I was just like, maybe 40 years. And I was just like, I'm not going to watch this. I'd be fine if they cleaned house, but I don't know that it's Judge per se or whatever. I would take Flores over Judge because Judge hasn't really shown anything. He's just sort of not a pass even, just like a no. It's like he hasn't had much to work with. But you know, look what Cully does with a team that doesn't have much to work with. Or look what Dan Campbell does with a team there's not much to work with. So
that was those are the two best games of the morning slate. You know, the early slate yesterday. It was Lions, Packers, and Houston, Tennessee, because, you know, those two teams, they might be bad, but they're entertaining. They're playing hard. Now, granted, they're not winning, but still, it's not their fault. They didn't construct that roster. They just stepped into the job. Brian Flores, he won 19 games over the last 2 years.
No, Brian Flores is a top 10 coach, right? Like you'd say like Belichick and Andy Reid and John Harbaugh and Mike Tomlin and the guys who have consistently won, obviously.
Vrabel.
Vrabel is now. But I think you put Flores there with, like, you know, the other upstarts like Dan Campbell, who looks like a good coach. Guys who seem like they get their players to play, and Flores does that. We talked about this before, but I think I talked about it with Sislowski too, but like we talked about it on XM, that I'd say, like, I don't know what the percentage is, but like 70% of the job, maybe more, is getting these guys to show up, commit to their assignments, be tough, be a hard out, and then, you know, 10 or 15% is like that X's and O's and the, you know, down and distance stuff. And anyway, the X's and O's, you outsource the coordinators usually anyway. So it's like down and distance stuff. I mean, it matters, but, you know, having a team like the Steelers that's going to play hard matters more. Having a team like the Titans that's going to play hard matters more than that stuff. Yep. And it seems like Flores at least had that, and just get him a good coordinator. But, wow, that's shocking. He's going to get snapped up, though, pretty quick, I think.
I think so, too. I think so, too. So it was really surprising to see that one. You know, I think that there'll be – now, the question is, you know, can he get the offensive side? Can he get the right offensive coordinator? But the Miami's owner, Stephen Ross, is like one of the sneaky bad owners in the NFL. Remember, this is the same guy that's trying to orchestrate the trade for Deshaun Watson, like basically doing it on his own. You know, he was the one like, go trade for Watson. Yeah, I know we have Tua and we gave up the world to get Tua, but go trade for Watson. So maybe this is part of that. Because Ross said he cited communication as an issue there. I mean, so clearly he wants to have his guys and all that. He's one of those hands-on owner types. So, but he kept the GM, which is the other thing. So there might have been a power struggle. There's stuff, you know, the stuff that happens behind the scenes that we don't know about sometimes. That could be very well it. But I'm not trying to justify it at all. I think it's really dumb and stupid that they did that. But anywho. That's going to be fun. There's going to be other firings too. I still think Judge should get fired. I still think, I think that Matt Rhule the worm has turned on him. You know what though? I will say this here, in an argument in favor of being patient is the Bengals and Zach Taylor, because look at what happened in year three with the Bengals and Taylor. Year two with their franchise quarterback stays healthy for the full season. You know, gets that full development, good things happen. You know, a long-term plan comes into play and it actually works. I don't know if Zach Taylor is a top 10 coach yet. I'm not completely sold on that.
He's top 30 for sure. The thing about this is it's coaches are like quarterbacks, like kickers. The vast middle doesn't matter, right? So it's just whatever the circumstances are. Really bad ones matter to the negative and really good ones matter to the positive. But the vast middle are basically fungible. And so he was bad. Then he gets Burrow stays healthy. They get Jamar Chase, T Higgins, as you said, all of a sudden they're good. Well, yeah, because it's easy to coach when you have, you know, one of the young rising star quarterbacks and incredible skill players on offense. And it's hard to coach when you have like the carcass of Andy Dalton and a bunch of scrubs when he got hurt playing. So, you know, most of these guys, we're just quick to judge. No pun intended. And it's really not indicative one way or the other. Now, out of those scrubs or good seasons, some unique ones will emerge. Like maybe Dan Campbell's a great coach. Maybe Flores is a great coach. We don't know yet. And we'll find out eventually. But mostly they're in the middle. And it's just circumstance. And, you know, it's like half the teams, not half, but like a third of the teams are going to have good seasons. A third of the teams are going to have average seasons, and a third of the teams are going to have bad seasons. And every time you're in the bottom third, if you just clean house, it's like, well, I mean, there's always like a 30% chance you underperform, you know, by a margin, you know, by a decent margin. So,
right.
You know, I think people are rash. I mean, Nagy's been around a long time. Zimmer's been around a long time. I mean, I think those guys, it was time for a change, and that was, you know, that was warranted.
Nagy's been around for 4 years, by the way. It's not that long. And he was coach of the year in his first year.
Yeah. I think he's all right. Well, yeah, he had like a great defense that year, right? So it was easy to coach. And, you know, now his defense is just so-so. And I think he's okay, Nagy. I just think that you get 4 years and you don't distinguish yourself as a great coach, go ahead and move on. It's just like a quarterback, right? Like Danny Dimes is below the threshold by a decent margin. But even like Baker, right? It's like Baker Mayfield's better than Danny Dimes. But like you had 4 years. You're okay. You're decent. Like I don't see a problem moving on at that point. I wouldn't move on from a guy after 1 year. You know, Zach Wilson looks shaky, but it's 1 year. Give him a couple of years. But 4 years, you know, there's a chance he blows up for somebody else. Maybe. I wouldn't be too scared of it. I think he could, you know, end up being like a good quarterback on a winning team for somebody for sure. They were a winning team last year. But like, you know, after 4 years, I think you start to get like, we're not worried this guy's a genius or anything, or this guy's a, you know, an elite player. And so I think you can safely move on. And Zimmer, same thing. It's like, he did all right. The Vikings have been decent, but it's time to move on.
Yeah, I guess so. Before we finish up the podcast, got some more business to take care of real quick. Skybox Sports Network is your hardcore source for odds and sports tickers. Skybox Sports has been creating an entertaining and relevant products for restaurants, sports bars, casinos, race and sports books, arenas, and stadiums for years. Now you can bring a little Vegas into your fan cave. Skybox's low-cost and state-of-the-art Wi-Fi platform is a simple and affordable plug, play, and activate format. Skybox Sports tickers bring you live odds, propositions, fantasy scores, hires, fires, trades, breaking news, and recaps with in-depth coverage for the NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, PGA, NASCAR, UFC, specialty events, and more. Visit SkyboxSportsNetwork.com and use promo code ROTOWIRE5 for a 5% discount off your order.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thanks to Skybox. Thanks to the Blue Wire Network for hosting our podcast on their network. Let's talk a little Rams and Niners. That was the other wild game, I thought, and had some serious implications. I was with the Twitter majority thinking Jimmy G should have been benched in the second quarter after that pick. He threw that duck, and I just thought, okay, it's game over. It's 17-0 Rams. They just picked off Garoppolo. He can't throw it deep. That seems obvious after that duck. It's time to make a change. It wasn't. It turned out it wasn't.
Yeah, it was 17-0 to a good team on the road. It's crazy they won that game. And McVay had never lost a game while leading at half. But McVay lost this game. I mean, McVay did one of the most cowardly things I saw all day, probably the most cowardly thing of all the things. You know, they made fun of Ted Bell brought up. They made fun of Joe Judge for, you know, like running the ball on 3rd-and-9 deep in his own end. But what was he going to do anyway? They made, you know, there was the kind
of. It was the fact that it was the formation, the quarterback sneak, and they did the same thing on second down too. That's the thing that was so.
They were like, well, but like, you know, what are they going to do? That team was so dead. But anyway, so there was that. There was the Brandon Staley going forward and, you know, deep in his own end. But none of that comes close to what McVay did, where it was 24-17 Rams, and there's, you know, there's like 2 minutes left in the game, and it's 3rd and 9. They handed off twice to use the Niners timeouts, and on 3rd and 9 they handed off again, gets tackled after 2 yards, and punted back to them with 1:34, no timeouts left. I mean, dude, you think make them use that last timeout is that big of a deal? You've got like a 30% chance of converting that 3rd and 9 to Cooper Kupp or whatever against a bad secondary, and the game is over. It's just over.
And it was only 3rd and 7 too. It wasn't even as bad as even worse.
Yeah. It was like, it's like you have a 35% chance of just converting that and ending the game. But instead you're going to run it where you have like a 10% chance. And then, you know, so what? So you made them burn a timeout and punt it back to them. They shouldn't have touched the ball again, or maybe they should have, but who cares if they have the extra, you know, 30 seconds or the extra timeout? I mean, that was just unbelievable. I was, you know, I had the Niners +3. I mean, so 4.5 or whatever it was, 3.5. I was like, thank you. I was like, thank you for doing that. And then, you know, Debo made that incredible. Like, Debo Samuel was such a good player. It's not just a fantasy thing, which he was a monster this year, but that guy like catches, he was like turned around, sees the ball coming, kind of sticks his hand out, grabs it, deeks two guys, runs for another 30 yards. Like, that guy is just so aware. He's just a natural football player, that guy. And he's so physical. He's their best running back. He's their best receiver. He's their best quarterback. I mean, this guy just did everything. And what a game. I mean, that was, and you know, it was a great drive to come back. It was just, I don't know. It was just, and Shanahan said, we want to run the ball 40 times. And they just kept running it. They kept running it down their throats. It was just a,
Running that trick play where Debo throwing the ball was just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was wild. I mean, if you're a Niners fan, you have to be over the moon just watching that. You know, it does raise the question, though. Lance may not play again. He might not be the guy next year.
Dalton says
no. If the Niners go on a run, what if the Niners win 2 games in the playoffs?
Okay, so this is what I wrote about this in my column. I think the reason why Lance is definitely starting week 1 next year, even though I hope not for Dalton's sake, because I just want to mock him all next year, is that if Garoppolo does play really well in the playoffs and they lose, you know, say in the, you know, championship game or whatever, then he'll have trade value. Like, the Broncos and Steelers need QBs. The Giants need a QB. Like, Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers can't play for everybody. And so somebody's going to need a Garoppolo level QB, because Teddy Bridgewater and, you know, Mason Rudolph and Daniel Jones are not cutting it. So I think Garoppolo, especially in a place like Denver that has a good setup, could actually be, you know, good. He can throw a decent ball. So if he were to play well in the playoffs against good defenses, I think they'd be able to trade him for like, he's got a huge contract, but it's only for 1 more year. And so maybe they could get, you know, I don't know, a second round pick or a third round, you know,
the Colts could trade another first round pick for him.
He'd be perfect for the Colts, because he'd be just under the threshold that they need yet again. But maybe not. But I think Garoppolo is better than Wentz and Rivers, and he's better than Bridgewater. So, you know, I think if he does well, it gives them a path to trading him. And if he does poorly, then they're not going to use him anyway. So I'm almost positive Lance is starting week 1.
Yeah. I'm going to make a completely unsourced prediction here. Russell Wilson's going to be the source of all this trade speculation, and he's going to stay put.
Okay.
But Kirk Cousins and Jimmy G are going to get traded. Right. One of them will go to Denver. One of them will go to Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, they would be big improvements. I think Cousins in Denver could be good. I think he could, that would be a good fit, because he's used to having good receivers, and he would have them there.
Yeah. I mean, Denver's got a roster that is pretty solid, but the QB position is way, way below everybody else in the division. Think about that there. You've got Mahomes, you got Herbert. Say what you will about Carr, but Carr's above whatever Denver had going at quarterback this year, whether it's Bridgewater or Locke, obviously. But Jimmy G versus Carr, you know, versus that, at least Carr would be at that level. He's at the level.
Yeah, I think Jimmy G and Carr are comparable. Carr might be better, actually, because he makes fewer mistakes. But Jimmy G throws a nice ball. I mean, that's probably – the thing is, though, QBs are like coaches. You know, it's like the vast middle, like the Jimmy G's and Carr's, they're so situationally dependent. Like, you put them in a situation where the line doesn't play well, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy's like the worst quarterback I've ever seen. You put him in a situation where the line is good, you're like, wow, this guy throws an incredible ball. Look at you know, he's carving people up. And he's right at that level where, you know, where the environment's really going to make all the difference.
Yeah, he is. He is. So it'll be fine. I mean, Russell Wilson looked better the last couple of weeks. You know, is that enough just to give this false hope or maybe actual hope? I don't know. They have to decide what to do with Rashad Penny. I think they didn't pick up his option. So I think he's a free agent. So it'll be interesting to see where he lands.
Rashad Penny. I mean, if we knew that, you know, that exercise I do, that everybody in the league would stay healthy, he signed a 4-year deal in 20. Oh, no, they declined his option in May of this year. You're right. They didn't pick it up. If we knew that everybody in the league would miraculously stay healthy, there's no injuries, no COVID list next year, everybody plays the full season.
Right.
Where does Penny get drafted? Second round? I mean, we're like, we know everyone's staying healthy. I mean, Penny is like, he's dynamic. He's explosive. The guy breaks away. People don't catch him.
He was outrunning Buda Baker.
I know.
In that big play. I mean, he's huge too for that speed. Yeah. I mean, you can see why they took him in the first round. It's just, you know, there's just those little glimpses. But I mean, we're talking about 4 or 5 weeks in a row here. Like, my God, they're really going to be, it's going to be a tough decision. But anyways, a lot more to talk about. We're going to be doing a lot of playoff stuff this week on the XM show. So, and of course, we'll do fantasy playoff talk this week on the podcast as well later on. But we got to sign off now. So I want to thank WinBet for the season-long sponsorship. Chris and I will be doing the XM show later. If you want to catch that, we'll be doing it all week long. So thanks for listening. Jake and Joe will be at you tomorrow. Take care.